This episode is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. When you want the best, you have to act fast, especially when hiring for your business. You want to find the most talented people before the competition scoops them up. And the best way to do that? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds top talent fast. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. And right now, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Spotify. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Hello, I'm Rob Beckett.
And I'm Josh Widdicombe.
Welcome to Parent in Hell, the show in which Josh and I discuss what it's really like to be a parent, which I would say can be a little tricky.
So, to make ourselves, and hopefully you, feel better about the trials and tribulations of modern-day parenting, each week we'll be chatting to a famous parent about how they're coping.
Or hopefully how they're not coping.
And we'll also be hearing from you, the listener, with your tips, advice and, of course, tales of parenting woe.
Because let's be honest, there are plenty of times when none of us know what we're doing. Hello, you're listening to Now That's What I Call Parents in Hell, Volume 2.
Am I right in saying so Robin's lost his front teeth, didn't he?
Oh, God, yeah. So basically, he had one of them, you know, the balance bikes where there's no pedals, they just run.
Yeah.
They're basically running on a bike. Yeah. He had one of them from, you know, as old as you allowed one. I think it was two, just before two you allowed them. And he had one and he was amazing on it. But he was amazing at the point of he didn't understand fear. Like, he got so good on this and he was just like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And it was like, everyone used to say, my God, he's fantastic on that. And it's a real bone of contention, right? So there's this place in South Shields called the Amphitheatre. It's an open-air performance space down on the seafront that they do, like, little festivals there in the summer. And it's got an under walkway bit that's covered over. Now, the floor of that is tiled, right? But there's sort of sand everywhere because it's, you know, it's windy. It's the north. So he's coming down this hill that's paved, and then it goes under the tiled floor bit and turns to the right, okay? And we did it. He's only little, and I'm running alongside him on this bike, and me heart's in me throat. It's terrifying, right? And Rosie's just sitting watching me. And he went down, and I went, right, I don't think we should do this again. He went, one more. I went, right, one more. He did three times. Oh. Three's a magic number. I let him do three. I went, there we go, that's it. And he started crying. He went, I want to do it again. And Rosie went, let him do it again. And I said the words, no, he nearly fell. It's dangerous. And she said... do it again, go on, just let him do it again. And we did it again, and on that one, he's got too much sand on his wheel, he slipped, and his face hit the deck, and he snapped his two front teeth in half. And it was one of the worst moments in my life, like, without a doubt. Like, he just hit the deck, and he lifted his face up, and there was just blood all over his face, and two bits of his teeth were missing, and Rosie handled it like a champ, and I was flapping. Like,
oh, what do you do in that?
Of course you were, mate. God, Rosie, his teeth, he's broke his teeth. Oh, God. She was like, calm down, go and get the car. And I ran like I've never ran to the car park, got the car, literally screeched around the corner. They jumped in the car. We drove off. She was like, calm your driving down or we're going to crash on the way to the hospital, you idiot. So we drove up there to the hospital. We had a look at it. We went to the dentist the day after. They sort of filled them in. But then all his gums were like, they went a bit black and all his gums were really lumpy and stuff. So it was basically getting infected. And he got them taken out.
Wow.
It was.
And does it affect him in any way?
Absolutely not. They're just so resilient. And he's I don't know where he gets it from. I'm a wimp, and he is literally one of the hardest people I've ever met in my life. He's like nails. It's unbelievable.
So does Rosie refute that story then? And or is it a given that she said one more time and you stopped?
All the years I've known you, and you don't believe me. Well, what is
no,
this?
No, I'm not saying it. Does she? I'm on your side here. But if we get Rosie on the podcast, will she say it differently, or is
Listen,
it a given
she's
in the
busy?
In the family?
She's busy. She can't come on your podcast. Leave it. Do not contact her. Right.
We're going to bring her out now. Like, I'm surprised, surprise.
I feel like Keir Starmer. Let me just clarify the point here. If we had Rosie on the show, would she say that she said go again and you said it's dangerous? Would she agree?
She will. She will agree, but she will then probably put forward the point that I should have just caught him like I did the previous three times.
Fair enough. Okay.
So, well, I mean, we've had that argument a lot. But what was... What was interesting about what happened was we took him to Newcastle to the RVI hospital to get his to get the teeth taken out, right? And it was so strange. I had to kind of drop him at one door, and then he went in with the nurse and sort of put him under anaesthetic and pulled the teeth out. And we had to walk around this kind of one-way corridor. Oh. You kind of dropped him off, and then you walked around the other way, and then he came out at the other end like a conveyor belt, like dropping your luggage at the airport, but like... Really?
Did you tie something around him so you'd recognise him when he came around?
I cling filmed him like them people do when on the machines. But he come round, right? And honestly, right, we got around. We were so worried. I think I was probably crying. I'm a disgrace. But we were walking around, and he came out, and he was sitting eating. Both front teeth gone, sitting eating jelly on the nurse's knee, and she was like, "I can't believe it." She was like, "Literally, we'll put a tiny bit of the gas to just to chat." Did they even do the gas? I can't remember, but they didn't have to properly put him asleep. They just did it, and it was out. And there's other kids screaming, and he was just sitting there eating a little tub of jelly, just buzzing. And he was honestly, we hadn't realised, but he was a different kid once I got them taken out. He was all good.
We need to ask you, Rosie, about, because we asked Chris, and he gave us his account of the day Robin lost his front teeth.
Oh, I bet he did. I bet he did give you his wrong account of the day that Robin lost his teeth. What did he say?
Just that you really went to pieces and he was heroic. No,
he did say you were heroic and he went to pieces, but it was the discussion before the bike ride, wasn't it, I think, Josh?
He said that once the accident had happened, you absolutely... owned the situation and he was a mess, but he said that it was your decision for Robin to have one more go.
I knew he'd say that. Did he fully blame me?
Yes,
I think yes.
he said he even warned you because he was taking Robin on a bike down a slope and he went down it a couple of times and he nearly fell off and then Chris caught him and then he said let's not do this anymore and then you said give him one last go. And Chris said that he said, no, I don't think we should. And you said, do it. And then that's when the teeth accident happened. Is that not correct, Rosie?
In my defense, it kind of is, right? Because that did kind of happen. But in my defense, he was the one who was taking him down the hill. I couldn't see because I was at the bottom, probably on my phone, not going to lie. So he was the one who was doing it and taking him down. So he knew how fast he was going. Yeah. He could assess the danger of the situation more than I could.
Yes.
So, and I'm sorry, but how spineless have you got to be for me to just go, no, do it one more time.
Yeah.
And him to go, all right, I'll do it one more time.
Even so, if you know it's dangerous, that you're so scared to say no to you.
He acts like he's terrified of us. I swear to God, like and you know what annoyed me about that? I'm going to have a word with him because when we wrote the book, that went in the book, and we decided to take 50-50 responsibility for that incident.
Oh, no.
And I can't believe he's just chucked me under the bus like this on a podcast. So we'll be having a word.
Okay. Well, I thought that would be resolved, but it sounds like it's just been opened up again.
You've caused something here. We've got to do a podcast later on.
Have you got a feature on your podcast? You should do like a Prime Minister's Questions where someone has to take the hot seat and just get counters thrown at them with backup documents.
I'm actually after a new feature, so that might work, to be honest. Yeah. We might do something like that.
Is Robin aware now? So he's kind of four. Do you think, is he aware that you're doing a podcast in which he gets talked about? Like, does he understand stuff like the fact that you're on Instagram and stuff like that?
Nah, he doesn't really know. Although he started when I was doing an advert the other day and I had my camera out and he gets really excited. He's like, are you filming, man? And I'm like, yeah. So he got the stuff out of the box and he was like, film this. And I went, all right. And he went, hi, everyone. And he started doing like a vlog. And I was thinking, oh, God, he's been watching us too much. But no, we don't really. He knows that we do a podcast.
Yeah.
And he knows that Daddy goes on stage and makes people laugh. But other than that, he's got no idea. Like, Chris was on the One Show last week, like I said, and we were watching it. And he's just not fazed at all.
Yeah.
Like, he was just playing with his toys, just like, oh, there's my dad on telly. Like, can you imagine being a kid and your dad was on telly? Like, it would have blown our minds watching.
I'd have been absolutely gutted. You're mortified enough about it. There's going to come a point, I suppose, where, because you're mortified about your parents when you're a kid, when you get to a certain age, what, about 10 or something like that? Maybe a bit later. So he'll start by getting excited about The One Show, and then in 10 years it'll be like, oh no, my dad's on The One Show.
Yeah, not again. What's he going to say?
Well, I think we had Alison Hammond's son's a teenager, and when we were doing the podcast with her, he could sort of overhear things that she was saying, and he was coming in, don't say that, Mum, and sort of dictating the terms. So you might be faced with a situation where you're trying to do a podcast and Robin will walk in and go, you're not saying that. As So you're set up, Russ. You're up north now in Manchester, aren't you? Is that right?
Yeah.
So it's your wife, your wife Lindsay, and then your daughter Minna.
Yeah.
And how old's Minna now?
4.
Good age.
Horrible, isn't it? No, it's the worst. Oh, mate, it's the worst. If there was a statue of Minna in the garden, I'd be tearing it down due to a fascist.
But it's straight. You tell me stories about Minna, like where she always went to bed at the right times, a very structured schedule, and she was a good sleeper and stuff like that. And then you tell me stories about, like, on trains, she'd just strip off naked and there's nothing you could do. Yeah. And so what kind of child is she? Like, how is it?
I always say to people, even a serial killer is peaceful when they're asleep, right? You could walk into Ted Bundy's bedroom at 3 a.m. and go, what's the fuss about? But you wouldn't want to be there at 8 a.m. when you woke up. So I have... And it's particularly men that love to hear about this. I've nailed sleep. And I say I, even though Lindsay and I did it together, I was sort of the one that came up with the plan, who said what we're going to do, what we do to get our daughter to sleep through the night. So I will admit we've got sleep. And I know a lot of people don't like to hear that, but blokes do. They like to perv in on my full night's sleep and hear how I did it. This is not normally go silent. It's like, oh, just tell me again, Russ. Just tell me again about your unbroken.
What was that? 8 hours for 3 weeks straight. Stop it.
More slowly, would you? And, so I'll tell you how I achieved that in a minute, because like, men love to hear I did it using nerdy charts. But it's when the eyes flick open, that is when the hell begins. But that sort of also proves that. That also proves that regardless of the temperament of your child, whether you've got one of the laid-back ones dribbling on its bricks as it amuses itself, or whether you've got a holy water sizzling on the forehead bastard like I have. I do truly believe if you want to, and there's no reason why you have to, there's no pressure to get your child through the night, but if it's something you both desperately want as a couple, it can be achieved.
What was your method, Russell?
The benefit I've got is I'm the last one out of all my friends to have kids, right? So the downside is I'm going to be on a ventilator when she's on sports day. The plus, 100 metres, go on, you can run it for daddy. Do you remember the war? The plus side is I was able to watch all my groups of friends, and what went wrong most often, apart from all the usual childhood illnesses, was arguments about sleep, kids in the bed, sex life going down the drain, relationship going down the drain, where the child's on the throne, ruling the house as soon as it was born. So I was thinking to myself, do you know what? I don't want that to happen to me. Plus, my mum was a childminder and a nanny, so she's a bit like badass with routine and sleep. So me and Lindsay were like bobbing around in the pool on one of those all-inclusive holidays, and we're like, should we go for it? Should we start training for a baby? And I was like, before we do, before that Marvelon pill packet goes in the bin, we are going to be in agreement on sleep. And that's the mistake most couples make. They just, once they've got a screaming satanic object in front of them, that's when, should we have the chat now? The time to have the chat is before fertilization. You need to agree about sleep in advance. It's really, really important. It doesn't matter if you both want to be bed-sharing hippies, baby hanging off the boob and all that, and you're both in the bed together and you're going to do attachment and go be up all night and be baby-led. That's fine. No judgment from me, and you shouldn't be judged by anyone. The problem is when you've got one person on one method and one on the other. If you've got, you know, a mum saying, I do want the baby hanging off my boob while our marriage dies and you wank in the spare room, that's an issue.
Have you been listening in to my house?
No, but it, because I always think everyone's like putting pressure on women. Oh, breast is best. You need to do attachment. No, what's best is a really buzzingly happy, mentally stable household where the children are being raised in a positive environment. If that means slamming formula into its mouth on day one, so be it.
Yeah.
Do you, I mean, obviously the you need to decide this before you get pregnant is of use to about 2% of our listeners. Yeah. So
it should be a filter on Tinder.
Oh, should you?
Early doors, isn't it? But to be fair, Russ, for the people listening, what age was Amina sleeping through the night?
So we did 8 hours by 8 weeks and 12 hours at 12 weeks. They were my targets.
They were your targets?
Oh, God, yeah. It's like the Wolf of Wall Street. I love it. 8 hours at 8 weeks and 12 hours at 12 weeks. Tell us how.
A little bit of baby trivia, which anyone now who's had a kid will know, but has maybe never realised it before. Most babies are born, chronologically speaking, like daytime, nighttime speaking, back to front. So anyone who's been lived with a pregnant woman will know, baby doesn't do much all day. Sit down, 8 p.m, watch a bit of Britain's Got Talent or whatever. Baby starts kicking, yeah?
Like
every
a hamster.
Time. And then kicks are all through the night. I've had a rubbish night's sleep, and then it sleeps all day. The reason for this is, as far as the stuff I've read, is of course, when you're walking around all day, if a woman's pregnant, she's rocking the baby effectively, and when she's laying down, the baby's not being rocked, and babies fall asleep when they're rocked, right? So they think that's why so many babies are born awake at night, asleep during that. And where you're so knackered, you just follow that pattern. And you end up 2, 3, 4, 5 years of screaming baby all night, asleep all day. So contrary to what some people think about being some sort of sleep fascist and forcing a baby to sleep through the night, it's quite the opposite. My daughter was never allowed to cry or self-soothe or any of that nonsense that people hear. We just worked initially when she was tight, once she'd regained her birth weight, towards keeping her awake during the day, which is much, much easier. So you're just stretching. We're talking about when they're really tiny, just like a game on the kick mat, a mobile, and inviting the nanas over when they're due for their scheduled nap. So babies need 16 hours sleep. Babies need 16 hours sleep. So why wouldn't you squeeze 10, 12 hours of that sleep into a nighttime and have the 4 hours naps throughout the day? So whenever she was due for a nap, that's when I'd let my mum in, start rocking her. So if she falls asleep, fine. Otherwise, I'd be getting like a vein in the side of my schedule head going, yeah, you should be awake by now.
So it's not about getting them to sleep. It's about keeping them up.
Indeed, initially. Oh. And then what you'll see is you can gradually stretch the periods at night, and people are like, you should never wake a sleeping baby. You should never fuck off out my house. What I would do is, if Mina was due for, I don't remember what the timings are now, because it seems like a lifetime ago, but say she's supposed to have 90 minutes morning nap from 10 to 11:30. 11:31, I'm unswaddling that child. Getting her ready, fed on time, awake on the kick mat. We were using like a cold flannel on her feet, anything to keep her stimulated and awake. And our friends were like, that'll never work. You
like Japanese prisoner of war torture.
Have you thought about working in Guantanamo Bay, Russell?
Sometimes I just scream in her face.
Just play loud heavy metal for 6 hours.
It was all done with like games.
I know, I'm invested.
But it was our friends, every single one across the world. Why weren't they supposed to get up at 4? You should be on Pornhub at 4 a.m. Play the game. And that's the other bollocks that winds me up, is that babies wake at 4, 5 a.m. There's nothing you can do. It's absolute dog shit. If you get on a plane to Australia, your baby doesn't magically know that sunrise has changed. It's because people's definition of what they call a blackout curtain is pathetic. It winds me up. People are like, I've got the blackout just like it said. And you go in and you're like, you could kill a vampire within seconds in that room at 6 a.m. You shouldn't be able to walk across a blacked out room at midday. Like, it should look like in Spanish and Italian people do proper blackout shutters and stuff. So that's what we did. So instead of doing a 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. date, what use is that to a stand-up? Because I want to be involved as a dad. I said to Lindsay, let's do 9 till 9 till she goes to school. Then we get a bit of an evening, and we get a lay-in as well. So that's what my daughter sleeps. She sleeps from 9 p.m. to 9 a.m.
Blimey.
Jen, can you explain to us and the listeners your setup at home with your kids and stuff?
Yes, I can. I am sharing my home with my ever-patient girlfriend and our 2 5-year-old twin boys, and it's fun times all round.
Oh, 5-year-old twin. Sorry, because it's actually your life, but I shuddered.
I'm sorry. Straight in with the empathy there.
Like,
I love it.
I did a live version. You know when you read an interview, so I go, God, no, fucking hell, five-year-old twin boys. Three dishes having a shocker. That, but sorry for saying it out loud.
No, it's all right. I'm living it. I know it. I feel it.
And how's it been then? So have you been in homeschooling with 5-year-olds?
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, I have. And I am shit at it. I am so shit at it. It's just that they don't respect you, your kids. I mean, not your kids, my kids. They don't seem to respect parents when they're homeschooling. I've spoken to a few parents and they're like, oh, fuck it, I gave up after 2 days. Just trying to teach them stuff, because we've got to teach them how to read. Everyone's going, oh, five, you don't have to do anything, mate. Just wait until they're 10. It's like, they can't turn up at 10 and go, sorry, mate, still can't read because my parents didn't bother homeschooling me when I was five. So you've got to teach them things like phonic. Well, I mean, the jolly bit fucked off a while ago, I'll tell you. It's just a horror show. And they don't, like, honestly, if I'm trying to tell them to do anything, they're like, oh, I don't want to do that. And anyway, you smell of poo. And it's like,
oh, they love you smell of poo.
Do you think the fact you smell of poo is a problem, though, Jen? Maybe that's why you're struggling to homeschool, if you didn't smell of poo.
To be fair, I've seen your stand-up, Jen, and there is a routine about you actually smelling of poo, so I think they may be accurate in that.
Well, and whose poo is it? It's not my poo. I'm not, like, just slinging my poo around the house. It's their bloody poo. They are so obsessed with their bum holes at the moment. And that's, I made the mistake of saying bum hole to them, and Chloe's like, we don't say bum hole, we just say bottom. And I went, it's too late. So bum hole's out.
Yeah. And bum hole's a great word, though, isn't it? You forget how funny bum hole is.
Could you use that to teach them all the different sounds? And you could say,
they want their phonics.
And then it'd be a great chance to teach them about the letter O, wouldn't it? You go.
Oh, yeah, because my daughter's starting school in September, and I don't understand this phonics thing where you learn the alphabet, like A, B, C, D, for anyone that didn't know what it was, that's the English one. I'm working on the Greek. But you learn all those sounds for A, B, C, but it's actually abaca. Is that right?
Well, yeah, but it's also more complicated than that. So you're learning sounds when you, like, say you've got I, G, H together, then they have to learn that sound is I. Or if there's an O and a W together, that can be ow. Or, yeah. So, you know, they've got to learn it like that. Or if there's an E at the end, like actually bumhole is a very good example. Now, we've got...
Let's explore the bumhole club.
Let's explore bumhole, because there's a magic E at the end of hole. Yeah. So the O is, instead of being an O, becomes an O. So it's not hole, it's, what is it, kids? Hole! That's right, it's bumhole. So we're all learning something.
We had magic E when I was growing up. Did you used to watch the Look and Read BBC TV shows at school? So it'd be like Badger Girl or Geordie Racer or something.
No, I'm like 10 years older than you, so I didn't have any of that.
Badger Girl sounds like a TikTok star. She just, got, you know, documents the badgers in her garden, which is not a euphemism. I struggled with reading, spoiler alert, as a kid. And I had to go to learning support, and we used to read the Biff Chip and Kipper books.
My kids are reading those.
Yeah. All I remember was they went, okay, you're going to go for private one-on-one reading. You know, I'm dyslexic, so I struggled with the reading. And the book was just bigger. It wasn't an easier book or specialised. It was just the same book with one person just pointing at the word. That's an opticians I needed.
Obviously, they're twins, Jen, but are they, how different are they as people, like, in their reaction to it? Do you teach them together, or are they kind of...
Oh, they're completely different in every... They don't look at... Because they're fraternal twins, because it was IVF, so, well, obviously, it wasn't a natural conception.
And if it was from a same-sex couple, Jen, that would be the first question I'd ask, to be honest, if it did happen.
Just a lot of friction, Rob. A lot of friction.
First things first, how does that happen?
Keep rubbing till we start a fire.
Yeah.
No.
So what's the difference? Because I'm a bit ignorant to this. So what's the difference from an IVF twins as opposed to sort of a natural twins, as it were? Sorry if that's the wrong terminology.
Well, no, it's completely the right terminology. If you're having a sort of natural conception and you're having sex that's how you conceive. If you're doing it with IVF, what you do is you spend thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of pounds and cross your fingers that something fucking happens. But it's a clinic, and then we bought sperm from the internet.
But you don't physically do that, right? You don't. It doesn't arrive like Amazon.
You must have get Amazon Prime. You know, you've got to keep it fresh.
Do you know what? It's not that different, actually.
Really?
It isn't. No. I know you're going, I'll come and watch you do what? Log on and then just buy some sperm. Yeah, you
really?
Do.
Really?
Really? How much? How much is it?
Oh, litres of it. No, it isn't.
Litres. It's been a long lockdown.
Listen, we needed as much as we could get. No, there are lots of different sperm banks, and it depending on which sperm bank you go to, but basically they have an online, I suppose, I want to say magazine, that's not brochure, something, and you can pick...
Do they have like star ratings?
Trustpilot.
They kind of do. I mean, in as much as you can see how popular that sperm is.
Wow.
I mean, I'd get one off Checkatrade, so I've got somebody's Andy in the house. I've got enough sort of gobby talking people in our family. We need somebody.
Yeah, but you'd get mixed messages, really. I've got three off this stoner. The first one was an absolute dream, but the last two, if I'm honest, are a pair of pricks. So it's 50-50.
So what did you know about your sperm?
So what you don't get, you have no idea what your donor looks like. So what you will get is information. And again, this really depends on the sperm bank, how much the information they get, they give you. So we went to the European Sperm Bank specifically because you get the most information about the donor. So,
right, yeah.
And you get sort of information about their parents, sort of health, you know, if there's any, I don't know, like dementia or cancer or anything like that in the family. So I think you go back like the parents and then the grandparents, and then you can, what they look like, what they do for a living, interests, all that sort of stuff. And then you get a photograph of them as a baby. So you can kind of get an idea. So, I mean, we were a bit cruel because there was a couple of babies that were completely boss-eyed and we were like, oh.
Pilot, come on.
Swerve that.
If you're paying for it, you're allowed to choose as far as I'm concerned. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, the irony is one of ours is boss-eyed now. So that was karma. There we go. I mean, like you can spend weeks and months deciding and then in the end, it's kind of, I don't know if other people agree with me, but it's kind of moot, really, because what you want is a baby. Whatever you end up with, you're not going to be like, oh, well, I wish we'd gone for, you know, Jeff.
Of course, yeah.
He had nicer eyes. Yeah. You're going to be like, oh, this is my baby. So, I can't even tell you how we chose our sperm donor. I think we just went, oh, fuck it, him. You know, I think it was like that.
and is it sort of, with IVF, you sometimes, it's more chance of twins. It's not like an option you pick. Like twins running in the family.
Again, it is an option we picked because you can choose. I don't know if you can still do this. I'm not sure. But you put two.
Buy level. Buy one, get one free. Eat out to help out. Well done, Jeff. So that's an option, is it?
Yeah. I mean, you can pick... Well, it depends how many you get, right? So it depends how many embryos you get. So once you go through the process of IVF, right, and then you end up with however many embryos you do. And then we went through one round of IVF and it was, we'd been through two rounds of IVF and it'd been unsuccessful. And we were like, oh, fuck this. This is costing a fortune. So the third round, Chloe was like, I'm going to stick two embryos in. And I was like,
double dropping. It's like being at a festival. I'm not feeling it. Come on, flares on in a minute. I'm doing two.
And if you just waited an hour, that one would have been fine.
We've got two now.
And I like gurning your tits. I'm going, oh, I wish I'd just stuck to one. So, yeah, that's basically what happened.
Yeah.
Are you a good cop or a bad cop as a dad, Dara? What's your kind of role?
Shouting? Can I hang shouting? Is that one of the things there? Turns out much more of a shouter than I thought I'd be.
Oh, really?
Yeah, much more of a blindly furious person than I presumed I would be. Yeah, no, it's a surprise to me as well, and to them a lot of the time, just how, I have told you to hold the fork. Correctly, the kind of, you know, just, not great.
Have you had a moment in particular, Dara?
No, just, you know, they don't listen. It turns out, no, I'm very impatient about things not being done the way they should be done. No, it's awful. It's a thing that I should probably have a talk about because it's like, oh, for God's sake.
Really?
But they will. I've always felt friends with kids whom I utterly adore, and they're wonderful creatures. But it is like it's a type of love you have for your kids, is the love, both the love at the start of the relationship of a romantic relationship. In other words, I cannot wait to see you. Everything about you is beautiful. You light up my life. You're amazing. You're fabulous. And the end of a relationship, you know exactly the stuff that makes me more angry than any other human being. And it's the two of those together.
Oh, that's a perfect description.
Dara, have you had a moment in particular where you sort of lost it with the kids? It was Shappy Corsandi had a moment where she flipped out over some milk tray, and it was called the milk tray moment within the family. Have you ever had a moment where you flipped out and it's been reminded
They've not been brought back because I'm a mortified when they bring them back up and I get angry again. Just the stubbornness of it, the sheer, there's been certain topics on which I get very kind of, that I've said this to a million times. Could you not do that this way? It's been like, get your feet off the table. We are eating our, that kind of stuff. Like, how often do we have to say that to you?
That was the thing. When I was a kid, it was like elbows off the table was the thing. And now I'm enforcing feet off the table. And you're like, how much have standards dropped in the 20 years since I was a kid? This was elbows and now it's feet.
I had a conversation at tea time today with my daughter whose arm was just draped into the middle of the table. And I would, take your arm off the table. She said, why? And we were like, just move like slightly further down. It won't put in you. Why? She said. And there he is. As I'm trying to give out to her, I have a routine about how stupid the whole elbows on the table was. Why was that a thing? To be like, whatever the, and I had a whole routine dissing the elbows on the table thing. And here I am, gone total full circle on this.
Like, so do you think you're like your parents? Are you parenting in the way your parents parented? That's a sentence I could have said better, surely.
No, but I mean, by all means, edit and do it again if you want to.
You should hear how your dad said that first time around as well. running through the family.
Do I? Yes and no. I mean, they are the model for certain things, and probably that's irritating. Why don't we think about this kind of thing? No, just tell me the answer. In that, I do, but I'm not sure actually, because I don't know if I think I've forgotten so much of my childhood. It was a lovely time, but it wasn't a thing that I remember really vividly. Do people remember their own childhood really vividly? Is that a thing?
I remember like the TV and the computer games more than I remember the actual experience of being a child, if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. I think there's a lot spoken about this. Whereas I remember everything from 16 on vividly, because it was like at 16, I got to choose everything from here on in. So therefore 16 was me. That was, and everything up to that was the containment of me. So no, I don't remember specifically how it was in that regard. I don't, my father had a thing where he had a no raised voice thing, which I've completely fucking ignored. He had a thing because my father was a trade union negotiator and he said, don't make me use my trade union voice was a phrase that he said. And trade union face or trade union voice, one of the two. Either way, we never got to see this mythical trade union face that he had, this work face, as stern as possible face that they could have.
But the good thing about that face is it stops at 5:15 on a Friday.
Yeah, knocked off. You don't have to do anything.
On the dot.
And so is everything else. When it stops, everything stops. That was the thing. That's how it worked. I asked him years later, he said, no, sure, there was no trade union. He said, he just came up with this bluff,
The whole way through your childhood.
That there's another thing, and that happened to be what he said, don't make me use my work face, my serious face. Yeah.
Don't make me use my jongler's Christmas week voice. That would be our version. There's two endos in a three stag doos. Listen to me roar.
Look, you're seeing my stargazing face. You don't want to see my mock the week face. If I...
What's your setup, Izzy, just for our listeners? What's the setup at home?
So the setup is we're in a flat. We're in a split-level maisonette. We were literally about to start looking for a house. So we don't have a garden.
Yeah.
We had a bed delivered from IKEA the day before lockdown started, which is in the dining room in about, I'd say, 12 different boxes. You can't even walk to the printer or open the window.
Oh no. You're there with Ellis, your partner, and your two children. What ages are your children?
So they're 5 and 15 months.
Oh, that's tough.
You know what, right? The 5-year-old was always such a good sleeper, and we were so kind of like, it's good we're so chilled. Such bullshit. Like, I'm not chilled anyway. I really pretend that I am. But inside, I'm like, oh my God, was that fish off? And I've just cooked it. I'm going to give everyone food poisoning and everyone's going to die. Like, that is my internal monologue quite a lot of time. Like, I'm like, yeah, I'm so chilled. I'm so chilled. Like, anyway, it's just not true that anything rubbed off on her. It was just her personality. So yeah. With him, like, he is such a shit sleeper. Like, the only thing that gets me through lockdown is the idea that if he was a newborn and we were in lockdown, it would be worse. You know, when you make yourself feel better by thinking, yeah. Well, at least it's not. Like, he used to wake up every 45 minutes every night and then wake up for the day at like 4. So finally he started sleeping through the night, probably only about 2 or 3 months before lockdown began, right?
Yeah.
So he sleeps through the night, in inverted commas, then wakes up normally at 4:30 for the day.
Oh, and so what do you do with your time at that point?
So the arrangement is, and this was never talked about, Ellis does every single morning and wakes me up at 8:30 a.m. Oh, and in return, I do all the cooking and cleaning and tidying.
that's an unspoken arrangement. That is just... Yeah,
it just slowly came about. And he was like, do you know what? I may as well do the morning tomorrow because I'm already tired. And by the way, that sea bass with ginger was really nice. And then... Slowly but surely, I became really anal about doing a weekly shop, which I've never done in my life. Like, my mum's always been saying to me, you should start doing a weekly shop and planning meals, darling. I've been like, no way, I'll just take life as it comes. And now, because obviously, you know, no one wants to go in shops unless they have to and all that, I am so anal about the weekly shop. And I even ordered like 2 chocolate oranges last week and then was like, you can only eat a quarter tonight because it's got to last us for like a week. Then I ate 3 quarters in the same night, hunched over the kitchen sink. Basically, so I'm in charge of like the running of the house in the way that like women were, I guess, sort of like, you know, in maybe our grandparents' generation. And obviously some women are in our generation, but certainly not really any women I know. So it's like, it's quite weird.
I'm going to say, I don't know where Rob is on this. I would 100% take your side of the deal. What about you, Rob?
Yeah, what do you think, Rob? And in a minute, I'll also give you a few details about what my job entails.
Yes. Just to make sure. Well, I think I can see the logic, but it's such an early start, 4:30 a.m. If it was like they got up at 6-ish or whatever, and then he dealt with the kids every morning, but he's like getting up like he's doing a radio breakfast show. It's like... It's so early. So what time is he going to bed then?
In the olden days, Ellis used to be the one going to bed at 2, even once we'd had kids.
Yeah, he's always a night owl.
Yeah, he really was, wasn't he? So he's totally changed. Like, he's in bed with a light out by 10:30.
Yeah.
And he's responded really well to lockdown as well. Like, he's like... He doesn't care. He's just like, as long as I've got my history books... Genuinely doesn't care if he sees me or not. He cares if he sees the kids, but he wants to see me a little bit, you know, like maybe 20 minutes a day, but that's it, you know.
See, you're too busy cooking and cleaning.
Well, exactly. I do look like I'm getting the chimney sweep out.
What I discovered was I was actually, once I was up, I'd had a cup of coffee, I was all right. And then I would have this dip at about 6:15. I mean, pretty much to the second, which used to match their bath time. So baths should be fun, but that was when I was at my most tired. And what I found then was it was too late to have a tea or a coffee because that would keep me awake. So obviously I've got to go to bed so early. So they would just have a really grumpy bath every night.
What time are you going to bed, Al?
I would try and go to bed at around 10. As anyone who knows me, you'll know this. I'm an extreme night owl and always had been, even when Betty was little. And stand-up used to keep me awake as well. And even when I stopped doing as much stand-up, I still had a stand-up's body clock. But that has now finally been broken by lockdown. So I try to go to bed at about 10. But I'd have this dip at about 6:15 and it was too late to have a tea or a coffee. So Betty'd splash me. And instead of splashing it back, I'd be like, you what, mate? What's your problem? What is your problem? So, like Groundhog Day, now I find this film incredibly poignant because every day was exactly the same.
And how does it feel now?
Well, they went back to the childminder, and Betty went back to school. So during his nap, which was when I used to do all of my work, I could fit an enormous amount into that nap.
Oh, you must have been so tired.
Well, I mean, the really pathetic thing is that we were watching. So then we'd get them to bed at about 8 o'clock, and then we'd have eaten. And we were trying to watch Normal People. The episodes are less than 30 minutes. We were doing 10 minutes a night with the caveat that I had to be in the mood. 10 minutes!
So what were you doing with your 2 hours to yourself?
I'd stare a lot. I used to unwind better reading than watching telly for some reason. And also, I didn't want to go on my phone really after about 8:45 because the screen used to keep me awake. Because being a night owl, what I used to find is even when Betty was very tired, I mean, even when Betty was waking up very early when she was little, I'd get this second wind in the evening, no matter how tired I am. So I've really got to try and avoid that, because if I had 2 hours sleep at night, as soon as it gets to about 8 o'clock, I actually feel all right, whereas I'll have felt sluggish all day. So I'm really trying to avoid getting that second wind, or I'll end up watching a film or something and go to bed too late.
How was your first day of the childminder and back to school where you had the day to yourself?
I felt like I'd won £50 million. I just could not believe it. I just couldn't believe it. And I didn't know what to do. And I used to get... When I used to get little moments to myself, I used to think, right, what am I going to do then? Am I going to read a book, or am I going to watch a film, or am I going to text a friend, or am I going to phone a friend, or am I going to watch telly, or am I going to read about telly so I'll know what to watch? So when I have got time to watch telly, I'll be watching the best telly, because I don't want to waste time. What am I going to do? What am I going to do? And it just, the whole day just felt so long. It's like when you talk to people of our age, who don't have children, near weekends, 2 whole days.
I find it mad that people have their weekends. The thought of just sitting and enjoy. I used to enjoy a hangover.
Yes, yeah, that's the big thing.
I used to kind of thrive on watching the football on a hangover and making waffles and beans for breakfast on a hangover. Do you know what I mean?
And now I find it funny.
Yeah.
If I was a bit useless because I was hungover, I was like, oh, God, sorry, I'm hungover. Whereas now I'm like, great, great, I'm ruining lives. I've ruined my life. I had 4 cans. Now she's crying and I'm crying. Great.
Also, as well, it's like you're paranoid the whole time. Like, well, I don't feel bad, but when would I feel bad? I feel bad when it's at the worst part of the day?
They're completely psychological now.
Yeah.
You're one of those dads. Oh, you're a Birra Moretti dad. Yeah, yeah.
Kids are in bed, 8 cans by the side of the sofa.
Do you think Izzy was worried about you coming on this podcast, Ellis?
No, I don't think so. I listened to it, and it's quite funny hearing her talk about me when I'm not in the room. Because for a kickoff, she does an absolutely terrible impression of a Welsh accent. And she had 10 minutes to practice it. The thing she mentioned, which I had forgotten about, I listened to her one of these quite recently, was I was initially shielding, right? So I wasn't allowed out the house at all. So I used to sit on the windowsill to try and get vitamin D like a cat. And I used to think this was a good aspect of my personality, but I have now reviewed this and I don't think that it is anymore. I would say I've got an almost superhuman ability to adopt my situation, in this case, complete lockdown because of coronavirus, and then find it completely impossible to imagine an alternative. So I actually wasn't that unhappy. I was like, oh, well, I'm unable to leave the house. That's my life now.
And did you feel jealous of other people who weren't shielding and didn't have a child waking up at 4:30?
If I had been a character in the TV show Lost, I would be the bloke who was quite happy to bed down for the night under the shattered wing of a stricken aeroplane.
Oh, well.
This is my life now. I live under a wing. I mean, the problem with that aspect of my personality is that it means you almost never try to better your set of circumstances. So I'm always oh, well. So I wasn't particularly unhappy, if I'm honest. Obviously, I was worried for people who were, you know, who were vulnerable, yeah, and that kind of stuff. And also, we don't have a garden. So but again, in that whole thing of feeling unable to imagine an alternative for my situation, Izzy every day would go, God, I wish we had a garden. And I'd say, why are you complaining about it? It's like, we can't do anything about it. It's like me complaining about my height. And she'd say, well, if we could buy another house. And I'd be like, I didn't start this conversation to look at solutions, actually, right? So I don't want to talk about solutions now, actually. So that was, if we'd had a garden, it would have been so much easier.
How's, because you're obviously, I'm loath to describe you as a professional Welshman, but you're certainly getting there.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, how does it feel bringing up your children in Southeast London?
It's weird in the sense that I spoke Welsh at home. I didn't speak English to my parents. Obviously, I can speak English. This isn't a struggle. But I went to a Welsh school and I spoke Welsh with my sisters and my mum and dad and my grandparents. So it is slightly weird. I do find it weird. I like when I go into my daughter's primary school, all the stuff on the walls about leaves and frost, it always causes me to do a double take.
Doesn't have enough L's in it.
And not. Yeah.
That word looks like I could read it. Hang on. That's too easy, eh? Way too easy.
The fact that it's not in Welsh always causes me to go, oh. And that is the thing I found weirdest, I think.
What about their accents?
Well, I mean, I don't know if Izzy, I can't remember if Izzy mentioned this, but our childminder is from Peckham and is in her 50s, right? So she sounds like Rob, which means, it means my daughter sounds like Rob. And that is endlessly entertaining to me.
Is there a certain phrase or word that just gets you every time?
What her childminder does is her childminder doesn't talk down to them, so just talks to the children like she would to an adult. But it meant that because Betty started speaking very early on, so she was quite slow at walking, but she was very, very verbal. So she would speak like a little adult, like a little Cockney adult. And she'd say, I'd go and pick her up. And she'd drop her pens or something, or pencils. She'd go, oh, I've had a right nightmare! I remember looking at the snow and going, that is magical. Look at that. Because she's a bit older now. She'll say things like, speaking of which.
He turned round to me and said,
yeah, yeah.
That's it for this special best of episode. We'll be back next week.